Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 7.
The title's quite evocative.
Which translates roughly to, "The Great Sage Escapes the Eight Trigrams Furnace, the Mine Monkey Settled Under the Five Elements Mountain."
Tells you a lot right there, doesn't it? Hints at consequences, hubris, and maybe finally some order being established.
Definitely. It's a pivotal moment.
So the goal here is to figure out how the Monkey King, after causing absolute chaos in heaven, finally gets subdued. We need to look at the key events, the magic, all that good stuff.
And the underlying meaning, too. There's always layers with this story.
Right. So let's start with his impunity. He gets captured, but then things don't exactly go as heaven planned.
Huh. No, not at all. It's almost comical. They tried, you know, the standard execution methods. Beheading. Axe blows, spears, swords, the works. And nothing. Not a scratch.
It's incredible. And it wasn't just blades, right? Didn't they try fire and lightning?
No, yeah. The Southern Dipper Star's fire deities tried burning him. The thunder deities zapped him with lightning. Still nothing. He's just invulnerable.
Imagine being the greatly powerful Ghost King reporting back to the Jade Emperor. Your Majesty, bit of problem.
Yeah.
is indestructible.
Pretty much. Total dismay up there. And that's when Taishang Laojian steps in. He's got an explanation and a plan.
Okay, so what's Laojian's take? Why is this monkey so tough?
It's actually because of all the things he stole and ate earlier. Remember the peaches of immortality and the imperial wine. Plus, and this is key, those five gourds of elixir he downed, some raw, some refined. Laojian says they all got forged together inside him.
Forged? By what?
By the samadhi fire within him. It basically cooked all those potent ingredients into making him the sort of indestructible golden body.
Wow. So his own gluttony and thievery accidentally gave him superpowers.
That's ironic. Very. So Laojian says, look, we can't break him from the outside. Let's work from the inside. He suggests putting the Monkey King into his eight trigrams furnace.
The eight trigrams furnace sounds serious.
It is. It's not just any furnace. It's designed around the eight trigrams, representing like fundamental cosmic principles.
Okay.
Laojun's idea is to use the furnace's intense heat, both civilian and military fire, he calls it, to refine the elixir out of the Monkey King and, you know, incinerate him in the process.
Double whammy. Get the elixir back and get rid of the monkey problem.
Exactly. The Jade Emperor, probably relieved someone has any idea, agrees immediately. The six Dings and six Jias hand him over.
And just quickly, before they chuck him in the furnace, there's that bit where Erlang Shen gets rewarded, right, for catching him the first time.
Right, yeah. Golden flowers, wine, pills, treasures, the standard hero's reward package.
Keeps the system running, I guess. Okay, so into the furnace he goes.
Yep. Laojun takes off his bonds, removes the instrument they used to pierce him, remember the fail, too, and pops him into the furnace.
But the Monkey King isn't just going to sit there and bake, is he?
Not a chance. He's way too clever. He looks around inside this trigram-based furnace and notices something.
What's that?
The spot corresponding to the T-trigram that is the wind element. Well, it has wind, but no fire.
Ah, a loophole.
A loophole. So he dives into that corner and hides there. Avoids the worst of the flames, smart monkey.
But not totally unscathed, right? Something happens to his eyes.
Right. While he avoids the fire, he can't avoid the smoke. It's constantly billowing from the other sections, irritating his eyes terribly.
Oh.
And this constant irritation for 49 days straight, it changes them. They turn red and he gets his famous fiery golden eyes.
49 days. That's how long Laojian thought it would take.
Yeah, seemed like the right amount of time to refine the elixir, apparently. So day 49 arrives. Laojian thinks, job done. Time to get my elixir. And he opens the furnace door.
Big mistake.
Huge. The Monkey King shields his now super sensitive eyes from the sudden light, sees his chance, and just explodes out of there.
He escapes.
Escapes and immediately causes mayhem. Knocks over the furnace, scattering embers everywhere. The guards, the furnace keepers, the Dingjia deities, they try to stop him.
It's unstoppable,
you know. And more than ever. He's described like a rabid tiger, a raging dragon. He just plows through them. Laojian himself tries to grab him.
A guy whose furnace he was just in.
Yep. And the Monkey King actually trips him up, sends Laojian tumbling.
Adding insult to injury.
Totally. Then he pulls his Rui Jingu Bang, that magic staff, from his ear, makes it huge, and starts wrecking the heavenly palace all over again.
Oh, man. just when they thought they had him.
Exactly. Panic everywhere. The nine luminaries slam their doors shut. The four heavenly kings just vanish. He's tearing through the place.
And there are poems here describing this, aren't there?
Yeah, a few. One praises his, like, innate wild nature and how he just bounces back from anything.
Like, you can't tame him.
Right. Another poem focuses on the staff, the Rui Jingu Bang, and how it can change size and is just incredibly powerful.
Versatile weapon.
And the third one is really interesting. It connects the Monkey King's nature to the human mind, the mind monkey idea, saying his wildness is like our own restless thoughts, and it reaffirms his claim to be the great sage equal to heaven. It frames it as part of his essential nature, something almost understandable, even if it's causing chaos.
Okay, so he's loose again, staff in hand. Where does he go?
Straight for the top. He fights his way towards the Hall of Universal Brightness, right up to the entrance of the main Lingxiao Palace, the Jade Emperor's throne room.
But someone stands in his way there.
Yes. This is where Wang Ling Wan comes in. He's an assistant to the Yu Sheng Zhenjin, a divine protector, and he is not backing down.
How's the fight?
Intense. It's the Monkey King's iron cudgel against Wang Ling Wan's golden whip. They're right in front of the palace, a proper showdown.
Evenly matched.
Very evenly matched, according to the poem describing it. It highlights Wang Ling Wan's loyalty versus the Monkey King's ambition. A real clash.
But it doesn't end there, does it?
Nope. Seeing Wang Ling Wan holding his own, but maybe not winning, the Yu Sheng Zhenjun calls for backup. He orders the Thunder Department to send reinforcements, and they send 36 Thunder Generals.
36? Against one monkey.
Well, one very powerful monkey. Mm-hmm. And these generals aren't messing around. They come armed with everything. Swords, spears, halberds, whips, maces, axes, you name it. They surround him.
That sounds overwhelming.
It should be. But the Monkey King does something incredible. He transforms.
Somehow.
Three heads, six arms, and he conjures up two more Rui Jingu Bangs. So now he's wielding three massive staffs at once.
Three heads, six arms, three giant staffs.
Exactly. He spins them around like a whirlwind, a spinning shuttle, the text says. The Thunder Generals just can't get near him. It's an amazing image of defiance.
Wow. There's another poem about this part too, isn't there?
Yeah. Emphasizing his invulnerability again, his chaotic power, capable of good or evil, just rampaging through heaven, it makes it clear heaven's military might, not enough.
So the Jade Emperor must be absolutely desperate now, was his final move.
He realizes he needs help from outside heaven's usual structure. He orders the wandering spirit official, and that's the true lord who assists the sage,
right,
to go to the Western Paradise and request the Buddha's help.
Calling in the ultimate power.
Pretty much. It's a sign that things are completely out of control.
So the messengers arrive at the Thunderclap Temple.
On Vulture Peak, yeah. Very respectfully, they approach the Buddha.
And they basically give him the whole rundown, all of the Monkey King's misdeeds.
The full story. His origins, the job he hated, stealing the peaches, the wine, crashing the party, stealing the elixir, how the Heavenly Army failed, how Erlang Shen caught him, but then they couldn't execute him, the whole furnace ordeal, his escape, and the current massive battle.
Laying it all out. And the Buddha's reaction? Is he panicked?
Not at all. Calm. Serene, even. He tells the bodhisattvas gathered there, "You guys stay here, I'll go sort this out." Just like that.
Wow. Confidence.
Supreme confidence.
Yeah.
He summons his chief disciples, Ananda and Kasyapa, and they head over to the Lingxiao Gate.
What is the scene when they arrive?
The battle is still raging. The 36 Thunder Generals are still trying to encircle the Monkey King, who's still holding them off with his three heads and six arms.
And the Buddha just walks in.
He calls out, tells the Thunder Generals, "Stop fighting, stand down, let him come forward."
Just like that. And they obey.
Instantly, the fighting stops. The Monkey King, probably surprised, changes back to his normal form.
Is he still angry?
Oh, yeah. Furious. He storms up to the Buddha and basically demands, "Who are you to stop the fight?"
And the Buddha introduces himself.
Calmly, "I am the Tathagata Buddha of the Western Paradise, Namo Amitabha." Then he asks the Monkey King, essentially, "Who are you, where are you from, and why are you trying to take over heaven?"
How does the Monkey King answer that?
With pure arrogance. He boasts about being born from heaven and earth, mastering magic, achieving immortality. And he says heaven should be ruled by the strongest. The strong rule, he says. It's my turn now.
Bold.
Extremely. But the Buddha just kind of scoffs. He calls him out, "You're just a monkey spirit who gained some power. How dare you challenge the Jade Emperor?" He points out the Emperor has cultivated virtue for countless ages, eons even.
putting the Monkey King's relatively short existence into perspective.
Exactly. He tells the monkey to repent, basically, before things get really bad for him.
Does the Monkey King listen?
Nope. He doubles down, says, rulers change, it's a cycle, the Emperor's had his time, now it should be his. He demands the Jade Emperor step aside.
This is leading somewhere, isn't it? The famous wager?
This is it. The Buddha says, okay, you think you're so powerful, let's make a bet.
What's the challenge?
If you can leap out of the palm of my right hand in a single somersault, the Buddha says, I'll personally tell the Jade Emperor to give you the throne. Heaven is yours.
Wow. That's quite an offer.
But, the Buddha adds, if you fail, you go back down to the mortal world and practice cultivation for a few more eons before trying this again.
And the Monkey King. He must think this is easy. His somersault covers thousands of miles.
He laughs. He looks at the Buddha's hand, thinks it looks tiny, like a lotus leaf. Easy, he thinks. Of course, I accept. He's totally confident.
Underestimating his opponent, big time.
Massively. So the Buddha extends his right hand.
And the Monkey King takes his leap.
Puts all his energy into it, zooms off, flying faster than light, thinking he's crossing the entire universe. He keeps going and going until he sees...
the edge of the world.
Five huge pinkish pillars holding up the sky, or so he thinks. He figures this must be it, the end of everything.
And he wants to leave proof he was there, right?
Yeah, classic arrogance again. He whips out a hair, turns it into a brush loaded with ink, and writes on the middle pillar, the great sage equal to heaven visited here.
Just writing graffiti at the edge of creation.
And then, just to be extra sure everyone knows he was there, he urinates at the base of the pillar.
Oh, classy. Really classy.
Hey, he's leaving his mark. Then, feeling very pleased with himself, he somersaults back, lands right back in the Buddha's palm.
And demands the throne.
All right, Buddha, he says. I did it. I went to the edge of the sky and back. Tell the Jade Emperor to pack his bags.
And the Buddha's response.
Calm as ever. You foolish monkey, he says gently. You never left my hand.
The Monkey King must be furious, disbelieving.
Totally. What? Impossible. Come see the proof. I wrote on the pillars.
And I left something else.
Yeah. But the Buddha just says, look down, monkey. The Monkey King looks, and there on the Buddha's middle finger are the words, the great sage equal to heaven visited here. And the unmistakable smell of monkey urine at the base of the finger.
Oh my God. The pillars were the Buddha's fingers.
The pillars were his fingers. The Monkey King is absolutely stunned, mind blown. He realizes he's been utterly played.
What does he do? Try to run.
Tries to leap away again, desperate now. But the Buddha is faster. He just flips his hand over, palm downwards.
And traps him.
Casts him right out of the western gate of heaven. And as the Monkey King falls, the Buddha transforms his five fingers, metal, wood, water, fire, earth, into a massive mountain range. The Five Elements Mountain.
And drops it on him.
Gently presses it down on him, not crushing him, but pinning him completely, immobilizing him.
Wow. Just, wow. That's the end of his rampage.
That is the end. The Thunder Gods, Ananda, Kasyapa, everyone watching just erupts in praise for the Buddha. Order is restored.
And there's a poem here, too, reflecting on his downfall.
Yes, basically saying his own rebellious actions led directly to this. Hubris, ambition. It catches up with you.
So what happens immediately after? Does the Buddha just leave him there?
He starts to head back to the Western Paradise with Ananda and Kasyapa, but then the heavenly marshals arrive, Tianpeng and Tianyu.
What do they want?
They ask the Buddha to wait, because the Jade Emperor himself is coming to thank him personally.
Makes sense. He saved heaven.
Absolutely. The Jade Emperor arrives with this huge, magnificent procession. He's incredibly grateful, obviously, and invites the Buddha to a massive celebratory banquet.
The Pacifying Heaven Assembly.
That's the one. A huge feast to celebrate the peace. Everyone who's anyone in heaven is invited. The three pure ones, four emperors, five elders, all the big names.
Sounds like a much better party than the one the Monkey King crashed.
Definitely. Dragon liver, phoenix marrow, jade nectar, more immortal peaches, the works. And all the deities come bearing gifts and praising the Buddha.
Like the Queen Mother of the West?
Yep. She brings fresh peaches. The Star of Longevity brings auspicious herbs and elixirs. The Barefoot Immortal brings celestial fruits. Everyone wants to show their gratitude. There are poems praising the Buddha, the peaches, the whole event. Music, dancing, a proper celestial celebration.
Okay, so the party winds down. The Buddha accepts the gifts. Is he about to leave?
He's getting ready to, yeah. But then a patrolling spirit flies in with some news.
Don't tell me the Monkey King is escaping already.
He's trying. The spirit reports, the monkey. He's sort of sticking his head out from under the mountain.
Seriously. even after all that.
But the Buddha isn't worried at all. He just smiles, takes out a golden slip of paper from his sleeve.
What's on it?
A 6-character mantra. He Lathai Om Mani Padme Hum, the famous mantra.
And what does he do with it?
He gives it to Ananda and tells him to go stick it on the very peak of the Five Elements Mountain.
Does that work?
Instantly. As soon as the slip is attached, the mountain takes root deep into the earth. It settles firmly.
So the Monkey King is properly stuck now.
Properly stuck. He can still move his head and arms a little, apparently, but he's not getting out. And Ananda reports back, task complete.
Okay. Now the beetle leaves.
Now he leaves. But before going back to the West, he does one more thing, showing some compassion, actually.
Oh.
He summons the local earth deity for that mountain and the 5-directional guardian warriors, the Uyu. He tasks them with guarding the mountain.
And looking after the Monkey King? Sort of?
In a way. He tells them what the Monkey King's diet will be during his imprisonment. When he's hungry, feed him iron pellets. When he's thirsty, give him molten copper to drink.
Oof. Harsh. But it keeps him alive, I guess.
Keeps him alive, yes. Until his time of suffering is over and someone comes to save him, which is hinted at.
Right. The ending comes. They set up the future, don't they?
They really do. One summarizes his whole rebellion and defeat, but hints he still has a role to play.
Redemption.
Maybe. And the very last poem is super explicit. It talks about his past deeds and directly mentions his eventual release by a holy monk traveling from the Tang Dynasty.
That's the setup for Journey to the West.
That's the hook. The chapter ends by saying, basically, if you want to know exactly when his punishment ends, you'll have to read the next chapter. Classic cliffhanger.
What a chapter. So we saw the Monkey King's incredible power and resilience.
Almost unbelievable resilience, yeah.
The sheer audacity and challenging heaven itself.
Took on the whole system.
And then the Buddha's intervention. Not just power, but wisdom, that clever wager.
Using the Monkey King's own pride against him. Masterful.
Leading to that final, inescapable imprisonment under the Five Elements Mountain. A really definitive end to that phase of his story.
And those little details really make it, don't they? Like hiding in the wind section of the furnace.
The fiery eyes being an accidental upgrade.
A graffiti!
Yeah.
And realizing it was on the Buddha's fingers. That moment of dawning horror for him must have been something else.
Definitely. So for everyone listening who wants that quick, thorough understanding, this isn't just a simple fight scene. It's got layers, right?
Mm-hmm.
About ambition, power, its limits.
Absolutely. It explores what happens when incredible ability isn't tempered by wisdom or respect for order. It asks questions about what true strength really is.
Which leads us to a final thought for you to chew on. Think about the Buddha's power here. Was it just overwhelming force, like a bigger stick? Or was it something more profound? Understanding reality, maybe.
Yeah, what does his victory, achieved through a bet and a transformation, say about the nature of power compared to the Monkey King's purely physical and magical might? And what are the ultimate consequences of that kind of unchecked ambition, even for someone as amazing as the Monkey King?
Lots to think about there. And of course, the big question hanging in the air, how does he get out? What happens next?